So this one is about Q, they say.
About Q?
That's what the internet says.
And like
That
this is the early an early introduction to Q?
this is a Q. The character in this, there is a character named Trelane in this episode. I feel like I've never seen this episode, and people say he's probably a Q.
Hold on. What'd you say his name was? Trelane?
Trelane, I think, yeah. Tremaine, maybe.
Give me 1 second. That name sounds incredibly familiar. I know this guy. I know this episode. I've seen this episode. This
You
episode
remember
is
it?
good.
Yeah?
It's fun. It's a
Yeah?
fun episode. Yeah.
A guy's doing magic, I would
I don't
assume.
remember it well, but I
Okay.
remember enjoying it and it being fun and silly. And yeah, no, this guy's a Q. 100%. Yeah.
Okay, confirmed.
It's not said in the episode, obviously, but
No, it's
like,
not. Yeah.
but no, this guy is a Q. I remember this guy. This guy was fun. I liked this guy a lot.
Great, great. Okay, wow, okay. I'm excited now.
it's only got a 7.2 from IMDb, so like, temper
Okay.
that
Well, you know what? Talking about Shore Leave, I think a lot of the take was that, like, there's not fundamentally a lot of a story there, and really not a lot that actually matters that happens, but, like,
But it's a fun episode.
but it's extremely fun. So, like,
Yeah.
sometimes the rating might reflect how technically good the episode and the writing is, but sometimes, well, my rating, and I said this in the last episode, my rating reflects how much fun I'm having, so.
Yeah, no, I'm somewhere between fun I'm having and if I actually think the episodes are good when I'm giving my ratings. Like
Right.
I try and give a rating for a bit of everything with a slight lean towards how much did I actually just enjoy the episode and enjoy watching it, right? So this one's probably going to be a higher rating because like this is just a fun episode.
I guess my personal enjoyment is probably 65% of my overall score.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd say that. I'd say that between 65, 75% of it is based on just did I enjoy the episode? And the rest of it is technical merit.
Right. More value is put into how much fun I'm having.
Yeah, but I mean, we're not technical. Neither one of us is a screenwriter
No.
or anyone who's actually in the industry. So
I
like
have
the
never, what do you
cooler
call those guys?
what a critic?
No, the guys that lug stuff around on the set. Oh, a
Oh,
grip. Yeah. I have never worked as a grip. I don't know why I felt like I wanted to point that out.
No, but like straight up, I don't have any
Yeah.
strong ties to the industry in any way, shape, or form. I've done a little bit of stage work, but that's about it. I would not call myself in any way, shape, or form like an expert, so I'm not going to be able to speak as an expert to that, right? So, and if people are watching this expecting experts, they've got the wrong podcast, yo.
Yeah, I think people have figured that out.
I hope so.
Okay, so yeah, so what do we know about the Squire of Gothos?
So we know that it was directed by Don McDougall and written by Paul Schneider. The original air date was January 12th of 1967, and IMDb, I mentioned it earlier, gave it a 7.2 out of 10. Item of note, as I was saying, this is a really fun episode and something I really enjoyed, and it's excellent. Paul Schneider also wrote Balance of Terror, which you gave a 10 out of 10, and I gave it a 10 out of 10. So, like, this guy slaps. We
Okay,
like Paul
great.
Schneider's work.
Good. All right, well, it's yeah, so far it sounds like this is going to be great.
It's so much fun. It's such a silly little episode. Like, it is 100% he is a Q. There's no question that he is a Q. Obviously, it's before Farpoint, so like we didn't know what Q were. They weren't involved in
Right.
the show yet. They weren't quote unquote invented, but semi godlike powers can create whatever he wants, have the scenes. It was just, and it's silly and it's fun, and oh, it's such a good little episode. I forgot about this one until like looking at the dude, and as soon as you see him, it's like, oh yeah, no, 100%. Like it all just comes floating right back, you know?
Yeah, I wonder if I'll end up remembering it because, like, yeah, I have seen a lot of these, but I don't have a. And I feel like I don't. One of the reasons I feel like I don't have not seen this one is because people who talk about Star Trek tend to talk about this one because it's, so whatever, supposedly an early Q situation.
Yeah, no, it's mostly just like I don't remember having a big impact over the over the show. It's not like it has like anything that really comes up in the future much that I can clearly recall. Like it's
Yeah.
pretty much a one and done. And like we had talked about with the other one, I was Shore Leave, it's in that same boat where like I don't remember there being a lot that really happened that mattered overall. But it's silly and it's fun and the crew's getting fucked with and it's great, you know, like it's that kind of an episode. Like it really does feel like I could see John DeLancey being in this episode.
Right, okay, good. Okay.
And
Cool.
again, this is my recollections of it. I could easily be wrong, but like this is how I remember the impact it was when I saw it last, you know?
Sure. Yeah, let's see what it's like.
Yeah.
All right, cool.
So good. I love this show, this episode.
Welcome back to The Least Ready Room, a podcast where me. A podcast. I have too many. I now officially have too many. This is a podcast where Dave and Chris, I'm Dave, watch every episode of Star Trek and talk about it with Saint and Weebs. Most of the time, that's who's here today. We're going to talk about the Squire of Gothos, as you've probably collected by now. Yeah, let's see what Saint and Weebs had to say about it first, and then we'll roll right into the post-episode deconstruction by me and Chris. We're about to have a thunderstorm out here in Connecticut. We've had thunderstorms these past several days. I can hear some booming and rumbling and shaking outside right now, and the kitties know it too. One of them's walking around meowing. Because he knows he doesn't want to be out there, but he also wants to be let out there. He just wants the door to be open. He doesn't fully understand, I don't think, that he might get trapped out in the rain and have to run under the deck and come in very wet and, well, I guess that doesn't have too much to do with Star Trek, but, yeah, let's talk about the Squire of Gothos. Say hello to Saint and Weebs.
What's up?
How are you, gentlemen?
I have no chance to survive.
Terrible to hear. I
Hey, what's
certainly.
up?
Whoa, hey. Hello to both of you. I am like really ripped. What's up?
What's going on?
I smoked a lot of. Is it called Zero Wing?
Yeah.
Yeah, I was lost for just a moment. I recall it being hard.
Zero wings?
You know, all your base. You know, you have no chance to
Oh,
survive.
yes. Yes,
Yeah.
of
Yeah,
course.
Maybe I should take it for a spin. Maybe every 10 years I'm gonna take Zero Wing for a spin. I don't think it's like good.
Make your time.
Yeah, right. Yeah, for great justice, take off every zig. I think.
You know what you're doing.
I imagine a zig was like a shuttlecraft or like a fighter that would emerge,
Yeah.
right? He was giving the order to take off every zig.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And
Okay.
they probably zigzag really fast. That's why they call them zigs.
Yeah, I guess I'll take a look at it again. It seems weird. It almost seems like why would I go to the effort of like getting the ROM out and putting it on my little device and like playing it for 30 seconds?
Well, it's the same thing as R-Type, basically, right?
Yeah, but like,
One of those
but.
side-scroll shooters.
It is that, but like not like interesting. Like, you
Yeah.
know, R-Type has a whole system of how you can kind of build your ship while you're doing it.
Or like radius or
Yeah,
life
exactly.
force.
Yeah. So it's like that without with a totally uncomplicated power-up system, and it's just like boring and hard, if I recall. But I mean, you know what? You know what? Officially, if I'm going to keep thinking about it, I guess I have to say, okay, I'll take a look at it and I'll report back to you guys.
I'm sure it's a perfectly, I'm
Playable.
sure playable. I'm sure it exists. I'm sure it's the
Yeah.
thing where you scroll sideways and shoot at things.
It's definitely that.
So what episode of Star Trek are we on?
Oh, yes. This is the Squire. Hey, this is the Squire of Gothos.
Oh, the Squire of Gothos.
Yes, do
The
you
Goth
recall?
Squire. It has a space continent named Tremaine.
Trelane.
And I feel like there is some memory beta, like B canon kind of stuff about him that's like he was really a Q before the Q were invented 30 years later for TNG.
That is something that is said.
Yeah, that's like back retconned.
Maybe from the writer's perspective, he's certainly not what we would think of as the Q.
Yeah, no. There may have been a novel about it or something that was
Okay,
like,
okay.
like that's what I mean by when I say B canon, like
Oh,
memory
right.
beta stuff
Oh,
that
yes, yeah.
somebody wrote a novel that was like about Trelane, and it was like he's really a Q, or he's like a baby Q or something. I don't know. I forget.
Yeah.
Or like he escaped from the I don't remember
It's.
the details. It was something I feel like there's something like that where they were like they tried to retcon various
It
TOS
could
space
be.
gods.
Like, I mean, it would be like. I don't really want to spoil anything, but.
Yeah.
Like, a lot would have had to have happened in the 70 whatever years for this guy to become at the level our John Delancey Q is at.
Yeah. It's been a while since I've seen it. I know
Okay.
he is a like a high powered
Yeah, he is a
space
godlike space entity. Yeah. He's
god.
doing Q shit for sure. This is a Q episode. I mean, in from a writer's perspective. So it's fun. Yeah, it's fun. It's more fun than some other godlike episode ones in a light in fun as in a more lighthearted kind of tone. But it's also, slightly dark Q drama. He's probably gonna threaten to kill them or something like that. Well, let's see, you guys.
I'll fix you for that. You cheated. You haven't played the game right. I'll show you.
Trelane.
Yeah, Space Mom and Dad have arrived
Right.
to take Space Baby back home.
No, you said I could have this planet for my very own.
This has gone far enough.
It was so
always
far, this is the
stopping from
one
having
that
fun.
most matches the
Participating
Futurama ending.
crew, we've told you
Yes.
before.
Time to come in now.
Although a few things
But
like
I
this have
don't
happened
want to
so
come in, and
far.
I won't. I'm a general, and I won't listen to it.
Enough, Trelane. Come along.
But why? I didn't do anything wrong. I was just playing.
Right, so I see why people,
Yeah.
like I said, try to retcon him as a Q. And it's easy to do because the parents never bother to explain who they are or where they're from or whatever. Because he's like Kirk is like, "Who are you?" And they're just like, "Sorry, sorry, kid, sorry." Really sorry.
We're really just embarrassed that we have to be having this conversation. See you in 75 years. I could really see because there's a lot of, and we've talked before about how a lot of TNG, the writers just basically looked at this and looked for things they could lift and I definitely buy that the writers of TNG looked at this episode and were like, well, we could do something like that. Yeah.
Yeah, we can do that, but better. We can do that, but 90s.
There's a few things, like, you know, he's got
machines.
Yeah, he's got the mirror that he needs, and
he's got instrumentality, as he calls it.
Yeah,
but you know, I guess the whole idea is that if he's a baby Q, then he still needs these machines to, like, focus his power or whatever, or to help him out.
Yeah, he's still got limitations. Yeah,
that's the word we were looking for.
That is.
He's got some lamentations too after his daddy spanks him. Probably.
He's lamenting all over the place.
I would have won.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess that is the thing too, that really just explains it. He's just a little kid, because he never explains to anyone what the hell he wants or what the hell the point of it is. He's just like, enjoy, have fun, and they're like,
no,
doing what?
Why are we here? What do you want? And he's like, oh, it will be delightful. Yeah, exactly, like a little kid.
Which, yeah, you know, yeah. And they're like, but you're not delighting me, like, at all. There's nothing delightful about this.
Yeah, except this sucks and I'm leaving.
Like, I had real shit to do, man. And he's like, no, you can't leave. I need to play with you. I don't care what real shit you have to do. Play with me instead. I have this conversation with my kid all the time. And probably not as much as I used to, actually. He's actually starting to grow up.
Wow.
As kids do.
Imagine that.
Imagine that, yeah.
Bizarre.
Yeah, this is a classic one. I definitely remember this one. I definitely remember the room that he's got them all in, and the chasing Kirk around with a sword, like, laughing his ass off. That scene of Kirk getting teleported into the poisonous atmosphere really stuck with me. I remember that one.
That would be a scary thing to have happen.
Yeah.
This guy has made it so that, you know, 1 cubic acre or whatever of this poisonous sulfuric acid planet is perfectly habitable to human people.
Yeah. Which is pretty impressive.
I mean, that's a big... Yeah, that's hard to do if you're not a Q.
Yeah.
Out of the two, like, unless you're trying,
no, no, go ahead.
Unless you're putting thoughts together, I should say out of the three, there kind of have been three kind of space god, super powerful being episodes: Charlie X and Gary Mitchell, Where No Man Has Gone Before.
Yeah,
this guy is the least annoying and even the least mean, even though he threatens to hang Kirk until he is dead. But, like, I think, yeah, and the first time I watched this, I was shocked to see that it was the actual Futurama episode, and that he was, you know, a literal child, like the guy on Futurama. And it really...
Yeah.
This one is one of the ones where it makes a lot more sense on a second viewing. Like, cause he really isn't, like, he's not even, like, bullying, really. He almost doesn't even, yeah, he doesn't even know what he wants out of the encounter. He just wants it to continue in his room full of vaguely European, generally historic artifacts.
Yeah. And his fascination with, like, human military history.
Yeah.
Like, it really does remind me of my kid when he was, like, 5 or 6 years old.
Sure.
And he was like, no, play with me, do this thing.
Yep.
But then, like, not really being, like, sure where to go with it. And, like, not, but like, at the same time being like, no, but you can't go. You have to stay here.
Yeah.
You know, it just, you know, a lot of the behaviors just kind of reminded me of my kid, like a few years back when he was much younger, and just, you know, still learning how to like navigate the world around him and like figure out how to deal with other people. And like having that perspective of like, that's exactly what Trelane is doing here, except the power imbalance is all wrong.
Yeah, the power imbalance is totally frightening.
Yeah. You know, it's like, for him, he's just playing with like his action figures.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
You know? And I guess that's literally what Melvar says at some point in this episode, or his mom or something says, like, stop playing with your action figures, stop playing with your dolls. And yeah. Then he's like, they're limited edition collectibles or some that's shit like that.
Yeah.
But yeah. Yeah, that's it's yeah, he's definitely written as a child. But you don't really realize that he is that way until sort of the end, basically.
Yeah, because I'm sure plenty of people have dealt with extremely annoying adults that don't make sense and won't explain to you what they want and are just behaving like children.
Yeah.
You know, it's not even like, yeah, it's. And maybe that's the point. Maybe that's the lesson here. And that's the problem, is that like...
Well, and it's also like the behaviors that are sort of tolerable in a child who's still, again, like learning how to figure out like how to deal with the world around them, you know, are not so tolerable in someone who looks like a grown-up and who has like vast power at his fingertips, you know? Yeah, like you don't mind that behavior from a 5-year-old because a 5-year-old can't really hurt you too bad.
Yeah, right. I liked it a lot and I gave it a 10 out of 10.
10 out of 10, wow. I'll give it a...
It's rollicking, in my opinion.
It is. I think I'm going to give this one an 8.5. I do find Verlaine like a little bit annoying.
Yeah.
And the...
Definitely the by the end.
And the generic European history bugs me. He's like, they're like 900 years in the past, and he's talking about Napoleon and shit and Alexander Hamilton. And I was like, I know Star Trek does not take place in the year 3000, okay?
Sure, right, yeah.
Not this Star Trek, anyway. I think, like you said, Discovery's like the last season takes place in 3000 or something. I don't know.
It's post 3000. Yeah, it's like 3100 by the end of Discovery.
I was looking at something recently about what they called the lost era of Star Trek, which is the period between the end of the TOS movies and the beginning of TNG. It was like 70 years, right? And there's no media. There's no media from that period.
Nothing takes place in there.
They have like some time travel shenanigans that happen from people from that period coming forward to TNG.
Old Scotty,
like old Scotty, old McCoy. Frasier,
extremely old McCoy. Was Frasier in the movies?
Captain Frasier. They had a. Kelsey Grammer had a cameo as a ship captain dressed in the old style uniforms.
Right, I recall that.
That was the episode where they kept time looping. At the end of the time loop, a ship would like an old style Federation vessel would like fly out of a portal and slam into the Enterprise, and they'd both blow up.
Yes.
And then the time loop would start again. And then at the end of it,
play poker.
Yeah, and at the end of it. They finally managed to break out of the time loop and they communicated with the ship, and it's Kelsey Grammer.
Right.
And he's like, what's happening? And they're like, you've been trapped in a time loop for like 50 years, dude. And they're like,
At what point?
They had some time travel shenanigans with Enterprise C.
Yep.
And what's her face? Tasha Yar coming back and stuff
like
that.
Yesterday's Enterprise. Yeah. Tasha Yar.
Alternate universe Tasha Yar.
Because the Enterprise C leaves its timeline, Tasha Yar is alive. But because they fix the timeline, she'll disappear. So she goes on to the other Enterprise and goes to the past? Question mark, question mark, question mark?
Yes.
Pretty much.
That's it? Okay. All right.
Which is why they can meet Sela.
Yeah.
Her daughter, who is like the same age as Yar should have been.
Okay.
They're like, you're a daughter, but you look like a grown-up. So, what's up with that? And they're like, time travel. Okay.
Got it.
So that stuff all happens in that sort of like lost era of Trek. But I don't know. That would be an interesting period, I think, to like make some.
I'm surprised they haven't done something in there.
So instead of making a bunch of fucking Enterprise prequels for some reason, I don't know why. They had like Enterprise and they had Discovery, right? And Strange New Worlds. And those all take place before TOS somehow?
Yes. Yeah, they all do. Well, the era that Discovery begins in and the era that Strange New Worlds takes place in are roughly the same. And Enterprise is before that. But yeah, they go into prequel territory hard.
They went hard into prequel territory, yeah. And I'm not really sure why.
Yeah, I don't know.
Because, like, and I think I've seen speculation that was like, well, they worry that it makes writing such advanced technology makes it hard for writers, which I guess I get a little bit. But
they ended up doing it anyway in Discovery.
And exactly, they do it anyway, and they end up making these things because they have these ideas four technologies that they want to write into this stories anyway, and there's stuff that is like doesn't exist in TOS, so it's like, how are you going to write that? It's like, I feel like that kind of ties your hands so much more.
It does, and they always kind of just
and they always end it up in.
Yeah,
they always end up like
fudging it,
ignoring it anyway because technobabble solutions are stock and trade for Star Trek, you know. And I mean, for me, I think that might be like one of my overall criticisms overall of Star Trek as a whole is that way too many episodes end with a deus ex machina.
Oh yeah. So many of them just end. Here's what happened. Here comes the being in charge to tell you what happened. And then we're going to roll the credits.
Yeah.
Even from a writing perspective, they just.
Or like, okay, this experience is over and the thing that happened is done now we're gonna walk away from it. Like the Android plant with Ruck and what's his face. You know, it's like, okay,
everyone's dead, I guess we can go home.
I guess we're done here. You know. There's a lot of episodes like that, and I it might be an overall weakness, I guess, just of the format and the storytelling. But hey.
They're weird stories, you know. They're not always going to have a satisfying.
Yeah.
There's not and always going to be some. Yeah.
Yeah, and I guess it's something we talk about all the time too. You know, this like different era of kind of how people told stories and how people put on TV productions and not even just TV production. It's like TV production obviously shapes it a big way, but I think just also partly the way people told stories. It's a little different. Like, it's just the way the culture of people's cultures evolve.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's cool. I love it so much. I love Star Trek so much. I love this old Star Trek because it is kind of like a window into the past. When I think about the original USS Enterprise from the TOS era, it makes me think of like US Navy ships in World War II.
Yeah. Oh my, yeah.
And in like like in the post-war period, like in the 50s and stuff, like early Cold War stuff, it makes me think of like the way, yeah, like, you know, the way military ships run, the way they operate, you know, just sort of technology and everything. There isn't much in the way of, it's not like TNG. They don't have no fucking holodecks. They don't have like a lot of entertainment space. They've got their rec rooms or whatever, but there isn't much to do other than for them to like play chess, read books, you know, watch some TV and listen to Uhura sing. You know, it's not like, you know, it's not like they're on a pleasure cruise or anything.
Oh,
you
yeah.
know, They don't have their families with them like in TNG and everything, you know?
Which is fucked up for them to...
Considering all the shit they're doing.
Families to be on that ship is fucked up.
Yeah.
With what happens on that ship.
Yeah.
Last week, Matt LaVella described this show as radio plays being written by a Navy vet.
And it makes me wonder, I mean, obviously the actors themselves are probably mostly too young to have been like in World War II.
Yep.
Or, you know, maybe some of the older ones, you know, could have been in Korea, could have been in the Korea War. But the writers, I'm sure, definitely were.
Yeah.
There are definitely writers in this who were, you know, who fought in those wars and who bring some of that, you know, mentality and, I think, you know, sort of like Navy military culture to these ships. I don't know. I mean, hell, the ship is named the Enterprise after the USS Enterprise, which was like this sort of, not exactly the flagship carrier of the US Navy during World War II, but it was considered like such an important ship because it was like the only carrier that fought from the beginning of the war to the end. It was around before or fought in like all the major battles of the Pacific War or something like that. It was the most decorated naval ship of the Second World War in the U.S. Navy because it fought in so many battles and was involved in so many, you know, major events.
And it's in the fourth movie.
Is it?
Yeah, doesn't Chekhov go and look at the Enterprise in the fourth movie?
Yeah, that's a different Enterprise, though.
Not the one? Oh.
No. The one.
You're not talking about Intrepid?
No. Well, the Intrepid is in New York. They're in California. But there have been other USS Enterprises in the USS, in the US Navy after that one in World War II. Including like a nuclear powered one, and I think that's the one that Chekhov goes to in four.
Yeah. Right. Does Melvar want him to talk about nuclear vessels? Is that that's from that? Okay.
Yeah, he's like say nuclear vessels, and you know, see, he's like say nuclear vessels, and you know, of course, you know, Walter Koenig not actually being right. Russian, just nuclear vessels, and he's like. He's like, not like that. Nuclear vessels.
Yeah, one of them is the Enterprise. An Enterprise.
Yeah.
So, Weebs.
Sure.
How did you like Squire of Gothos?
Yeah, I'm at like a 7, okay. I think.
Cool. You think he's a Q?
No, but he is the precursor.
Yeah. He does caper around like John DeLancey, that's for sure. He's got like DeLancey has got some of this energy. Man. Yeah.
I think God, like we say it so much, it's like I feel like after watching all of this and watching TAS, when we finally start watching TNG, and we're gonna be like, look at how they copied from this episode.
That's where that came from.
Yeah. I totally remember the first time watching TNG, thinking that a lot of times, like, this is from an episode of the original series that they just fucking rewrote. You know, the naked time and the naked now are the most blatant, and I mean they're trying to highlight it, obviously. They're like, look at this homage to the original series.
I mean, I've said this a couple times, but there are certain plot lines that appear, like, there are certain stories that appear as an episode in all three, TNG, DS9, and
I think there are some plot lines that are like obligatory. They're like, it doesn't matter. Like if you're making a Star Trek show, they're like, well, we got to have an episode where they
They rescue a prisoner, and the prisoner's a terrible murderer, but then it turns out that it's because he was mind-controlled or something, and then everything gets turned around with when they have to give him back to his captives. Like, that happens in all three of them.
Oh, yeah.
And one time, it's fucking Daedalus. On Voyager, that plot line involves the actor that played Daedalus.
Ah!
Yep. Oh my god, and sometimes fucking Chucky.
I'm excited to see the Son of Luna again in like about a week.
Oh, is that, that's how soon?
Yeah, House of the Dragon season 2 is coming out in about a week.
Cool.
I'm going to start Sunday nights. I'm gonna be watching on Sunday nights, so I'll throw it up on Discord.
That's awesome. That's awesome. That's great. I'm suddenly, for a variety of reasons, I'm super into Game of Thrones right now. I mean, a lot of it is from like talking to you.
You've been listening to Fire and Blood Part 1 too, right?
Yeah, now I'm listening to Game of Thrones.
Oh man, I tried to go back to actually read Game of Thrones, but I guess I like don't read anymore.
Oh,
I got to start getting back into reading a little bit more.
I went through several years where I didn't actually read out of a book at all, period, ever. But I got back into it.
I've listened to Fire and Blood like a bunch of times. I like it.
It's cool. That's like a good book to listen to, like a history, the way it's presented. It's like a fucking podcast about Game of Thrones history.
It is, yeah. It is. It totally is. And
I really enjoyed it.
It's a good narrative history. It's like sometimes, because I like listening to nonfiction books on tape, you know, and like history. And sometimes they're good and sometimes they're real boring. This is like a good narrative history. So it's like a history book, but it's also like...
It's a lot of scenes where they're describing big battles and people terribly torturing one another.
Yeah, or just like people, you know, arguing and talking about one another, like council... Yeah. Chamber scenes, or like even just like, you know, personal conversations, like the conversations people are having when like Jaehaerys Targaryen's mother is dying or something like that. Sure, that's like oh shit, you know, very serious. But like, you know, it's like this is a historical thing because it was recorded. There were a bunch of people there who witnessed it, and one of them was the Maester. It's one of these guys who writes everything down, so he wrote it down. But yeah, it's cool, and I like how they're doing House of the Dragon.
Me too.
With this as like the sort of source material, because when they did Game of Thrones, they stuck real close to the source material.
Well,
until they couldn't anymore.
But I feel like that's not even exactly correct.
I should say the first and second season stuck real close to the source material.
That was very true.
There was almost nothing left out, and there was nothing else like added. And then they began to diverge, and I think, you know, some of it was good and some of it was real bad. And then when they reached the end of the source material, that's when, you know, everyone agrees that's when it sort of just went off a cliff. In this, it's like they're really writing it for themselves because the source material is so thin.
Yeah.
Source material is so thin.
So like, it has like, to be, yeah.
They wrote an entire season of Game of Thrones off of a 600-page book. They wrote an entire season of House of the Dragon off of something like 30 or 40 pages of a book.
I think that's great. I think it's so great
it's left them room to like fill it in and for the actors to like really do work on it and the show writers to do work on it. And I think it's worked out great. They have some good people on that show too, though. They have some good fucking actors on that show.
I'm glad that it's done differently, and I think it's great that like the writers writing it are able to do their own thing, and that, I mean, I obviously I have nothing but shit to say about the Game of Thrones TV show, but I feel like once it was a snowball that once it got rolling, you know, it just got worse and worse. Like, I feel like the things that they started leaving out and the things they started changing, they had to accommodate what they had already changed until it just mutated.
It became a snowball of crap.
Yeah, and I really think that by the end of it...
Like one of those dung beetles.
Yes. Rolling up not like a snowball, like a ball of dung.
Rolling up a big ball of shits.
I really think by the end of that show, it was just Star Wars like everything else at the time.
Yeah, yeah.
It was just an Avengers movie by the end.
Well, I think probably plenty of people have said it. I think I've probably said it to people before. And I feel like what happened in the last two seasons of that show is that there was no written book. There was no written dialogue.
Yep.
There was no written plot. They had a bunch of bullet points that George R. R. Martin had written down that said, okay, this happens, and then they go there, and then that battle happens, and these people die, and then Arya kills the Night King, and then they all go back, and Daenerys goes nuts, and Jon kills Daenerys. And I'm pretty sure like the book is going to end the same way, and anyone who thinks that I'm going to be real mean here and say anyone who thinks that the book is not going to end with Jon Snow stabbing Daenerys and then going into exile beyond the wall is fooling themselves. That's definitely how that plot line ends. I don't know if Bran is going to become like the king forever. That probably is going to happen though too.
It would be a funny thing for Gurm to do, to write a completely different ending for Jon
and everyone, because he's like, well, you guys didn't like that TV show.
I'm sure people seem to hate that. But it was orchestrated poorly.
It was delivered poorly. Like I said, it was absolutely executed extremely poorly.
Yeah.
Yeah. And because they were like rushing through it. They were like, they had a bunch of bullet points. They didn't know how to write it. Bless you. Yeah, they had a bunch of bullet points. They didn't know how to expand it to write it out into something that seemed like an actual, believable plot. And they rushed through and got to the end. Sigh. Mm. Whatever.
Yeah, that's fine. I don't care anymore.
It's all right. We'll always have seasons 1 and 2.
Yeah, so, yeah, we'll see. Yeah, we'll see if I have any comments on season 2. But right now, listening to Game of Thrones, I can't believe how faithful season 1 is, and maybe too faithful, maybe so faithful that once they started changing stuff, they couldn't keep the vibe that they had.
It became inevitable, and eventually you have Ed Sheeran cameos and
Ed Sheeran was there,
and Sand Snakes asking you about the bad pussy.
What did she say about?
She's like, you want the good girls, but you can't resist the bad pussy.
Oh, yeah.
Something like that. It was bad.
That's also executed very poorly.
It was a bad line. It was a bad line.
Boy, it's bizarre, we'll see. I mean, I'm going to find out, but I really feel like so much, I guess, I don't know, because wow, I'm doing a really good job of talking, but I really feel was left out and changed in the TV show, and I'll find out. Because now I'm like, wow, all the stuff I'm listening to I think was in the show.
Yeah.
I mean, not all of it, but I mean real.
Not all of it.
Like, a lot of the dialogue is straight up right out of the book and put in the show in season 1.
Yeah. Also because there isn't a lot of dialogue in the book. There's only so much.
Yeah.
And like I said, the whole Dance of the Dragons part of the book, I think where they're probably going to end the storyline at season 4, it's like, that's like 100 pages or 110 pages or so out of the book.
Yep.
You know? And they're going to make four seasons of content from that. It's cool. Like, they're definitely going to do well. There's definitely parts of it that I'm like, I'm dying to see. I'm dying to see certain battles and certain scenes and see how they execute them and see how they decided to portray them, because they have so many scenes in the book and they're like, we don't really know how this happened because nobody who was there is still alive. So we have second hand accounts, and the second hand accounts are actually conflicting. So we don't really know what happened.
Yeah, they're mostly from a guy named Mushroom.
Yeah. And he's named that because of his dick. Or is it because of his head? Or because of his dick and his head?
I think it may be both. I think it said something like, it was one of those things. Some say that Mushroom received his name because of the prodigious size and shape of his head. Others say,
Others for the prodigious size and shape of his member.
Yeah. George.
George. Gotta throw in some dick. Gotta throw in some dick talk every once in a while. Talk about somebody's dick.
Yeah, House of the Dragon is great. I'm really excited for it to come back for a second season.
Anyway, yeah, we've moved as far afield from the Squire of Gothos. Anyway, I guess we're done. I guess I've said all I need to say about the Squire.
Okay, yeah, I was going to say, yeah, please feel free to continue or say anything else, or Weebs, if you have anything to say, but I would like to say, yeah, let me say thank you to both of you.
Yeah. I guess the one last thing I will say about Trelane that makes him very un-Q-like in my mind is that he's got no problem, like, trying to murder people. He's ready to, like, kill Kirk, pretty much.
Yeah, he's like, this is going to be exciting.
He doesn't really have any regard for his life, or for the lives of, you know, other beings. You know, as his parents tell him, like, no, they are beings. They are superior. They have, you know, like, consciousness and emotions. You can't just fucking kill them, dude, kid.
God damn it.
But he's ready to do it, and, like, Thews in general, you know, are mischievous but not murderous,
right? Yeah, for real.
You know, because if they wanted to be murderous, they could do pretty bad stuff, I'm sure. But in general, they're not down with that.
Yeah, they appear to have a scientific curiosity, but really, just as a race and a society of people, they're just phenomenally bored.
Yeah.
Just really bored, superpowered guys floating around like, oh, here's some humans. They're going to be really annoyed, but I'm going to play with them for an afternoon.
Yeah.
Well, oh, great, humans. I love these guys.
I always got the impression, too, that most Q are, like, busy in other dimensions doing some, like, 7,000 IQ shit.
Yeah, sort of.
And when John Delancey Q is busy messing around with humans, they're all like, oh my god, dude, are you serious? Like, why are you bothering with these, like why are you, they're all, almost like Trelane, like, why are you playing with these dolls?
Yeah.
You know, come on, man, give the humans a break. Like, why are you bothering with this? Why, yes, they have potential. One of them, like, in a few hundred years, maybe they'll start to approach Q-ness, and in 5,000 years, we can invite them in a continuum. But, like, please leave them alone right now. Like, what the hell?
Why are you doing this?
Like, you could, like, you have such potential, young Q. You could be doing 7,000 dimensional math, but instead you're messing with humans. You know? I feel like that's kind of the Q continuum vibe most of the time. You know?
At some point, they're like, well, John Delancey's Q, if you like these humans so much, why don't you go fucking be one for a little while? You're going to fucking hate it. And he does.
Yeah, exactly. I remember that one. They drop him naked on the Enterprise Bridge, and they're like, let's see how you like it when you are naked and powerless with a bunch of people you tormented in the past. Let's see.
That's a real funny thing to do to him. That's great. Yeah, that's great that happens.
And they're like, and we know we can do this because we know these people are not actually going to hurt you.
Yeah.
They're too good for that.
The ghastly truth, Mr. Data. I can now stub my toe with the best of them.
John Delancey. He's so good. I freaked out when I saw him in Breaking Bad. I was like,
oh, yeah, that was great.
It's John Delancey. Yeah. Oh, my God. I haven't seen him in anything in so long. What the fuck?
I feel like I definitely saw him in
Breaking Bad.
Yeah. He's in a couple of, he's in stuff, like, obviously. Like, I'm trying to remember what else I'd seen him in where I was like, oh, yeah, that's cool. But,
Yeah, I feel like I saw him in something else, but it might just be Modern Trek. Because he's been in a couple of Trek shows now.
Yeah. No, I'm thinking of, like, non-Trek stuff.
Yeah, I feel like there's something other than Breaking Bad, but I can't. But I don't know. Who knows? Oh, I'm sure I've seen him in a ton of things.
He was in Crank High Voltage.
Oh, my God, was he really? That's, like, my favorite movie.
I know, I mentioned it because I know that's your favorite movie.
It's like the perfect worst thing I've ever seen.
Yep.
Incredible.
Oh, that's right. He was in StarCraft II: Legacy of the Void as one of the one of the evil Protoss.
Whoa.
And I remember hearing him like voice acting when this dude started talking. I was like, that's John DeLancey.
That's cool. John DeLancey gets all thumbs up from me. That's fucking sure.
I guess he did some voice acting and a few things.
Yep.
Oh, right. He was in the Assassin's Creed games.
Oh, wow. Oh, yeah. I'm playing Assassin's Creed 3.
He voice acts William Miles. He voice acts the dad in Assassin's Creed 3.
Holy shit. I'll keep my ears open.
Yeah.
I got to the point where you see the title. Takes a minute.
Yeah, not the dad in the past. The dad.
He's the first. That character is the first voice you hear in the game, and it didn't. Yeah. I didn't immediately notice. So
apparently, he's in My Little Pony.
Yeah, totally. He's like, yeah.
He was in Charmed as the god Odin.
He did a whole like My Little Pony documentary and sings about.
Oh, fuck, he was in Invader Zim?
Wow. He did
Agent Dark Booty.
Dark Booty?
I think I remember some shit. Was that the episode with the babies?
I definitely remember babies.
Maybe it was some agent from the Eye thing who talks to Div.
Okay. Yeah. That could be.
Yeah. I'm trying to look for stuff that he was in, like back before Breaking Bad. He was in some Stargate, SG-1.
Yeah, it might just be that I know that he's a guy that shows up in a lot of things, you know?
Yeah, it's like a couple different things. Oh, that's right. He was in Planescape Torment. He did voice acting for a bunch of video games that I've played.
Yeah, I remember.
And whenever I hear him in a video game, I'm like, yes! Fucking John DeLancey. Anyway.
Cool guy. Yep.
Cool guy.
I got this.
520 episodes of Days of Our Lives?
Wow.
Okay.
Wow. Oh my.
He was in Days of Our Lives for 8 years.
When you search for him on IMDb, His first claim to fame that comes up in the search results is Crank High Voltage. Good for him.
Yeah, I noticed that. But I'm like, really? Is that really what he's known for?
Seriously.
I mean, to me, he's known for Star Trek, of course. But now I guess to some people, he's known for Days of Our Lives. Holy shit, 520 episodes.
I bet there are people that know him solely from My Little Pony.
Yeah. But that means 520 episodes in 8 years?
That show was 80s, on every day. It was straight
80s,
up.
80s soap operas, man. Soap operas. Oh my god, Days of Our Lives. TV series, 1965. Dash,
not even a blank. Not even seasons. It's just every day.
It is still going on.
Yeah,
it has not stopped. There are people in this show that have been in this show since 1976. Top cast: Deidre Hall, Dr. Marlena Evans. 5,193 episodes, 1976 to 2024. Holy shit, lady! That is her whole life.
Yeah.
Oh my god, that's so cool though, and I guess in a weird way. I've never heard of her before, but I guess I'm not a soap opera watcher. The role of Dr. Marlena Evans, a character whose popularity has created a furor and fan following seldom seen on television.
Wow.
I mean, I guess if you've been on TV continuously since like fucking 1976.
Insane, right? Longer
than I have been alive.
Every day. What is
that? That's closing on 50 years.
Those shows? Like, where are 50? They aired?
Still on network television,
like,
man.
Cable NBC. Network television still exists?
NBC. Daytime television still exists. Holy God, I cannot... I'm just trying to look at like the list of episodes. 14,884 episodes of Days of Our Lives.
Jesus Christ.
Jesus fucking
Jesus Christ. That's, I mean, boy, we're talking like, did I say there's 900 episodes of Star Trek? I thought that sounded like a lot.
And you're right. I was like, no, soap operas don't come out literally every single day. Well, yes, they
5 days a week.
Yes, they do. Yeah,
they no take seasons.
They take the weekends off. Like
they just
normal
keep
people,
going. Yeah,
but they keep going.
Imagine having that job. You got to make an episode of TV every day. I mean, maybe they make like, you know.
At least it's routine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just cranking out stories. Wacky.
Yeah. Ha.
Huh.
I never realized how insane that was.
Yeah.
Now I'm thinking about it. Now it's boggling my mind.
Bonkers.
Days of Our Lives has got to be like one of the most long running, if not the most long running.
I mean, that's. Did you say nearly 5,000 episodes? Is that what you said?
For this one woman, yeah.
Oh, for that, this one woman was in.
Yeah. This whole series is 14,000 episodes.
Oh, my. You couldn't watch that in a lifetime. Like,
no.
That's monument.
It has been on continuously since 1965. Holy shit. Like, holy shit. I mean, I don't know if they've ever taken breaks, but do they had like strikes or something? Like, if they haven't had a strike or actor strikes, maybe they take breaks. But I don't know if these guys are union or what. Are these guys in SAG and Screenwriters Guild of America and stuff? I don't know. It's on TV. I feel like it's got to be, right? I don't want to go down the fucking soap opera.
Yeah, I mean, boy. I mean, that's like, rabbit. It's really, wow.
That's a deep rabbit hole.
Like, I love TV and talking about TV. I have no idea what fucking soap operas are about. I don't even know I don't even know who watches them. I can't believe that's still a thing.
Grandma sure loved them.
Yeah?
Yep.
Yeah, I suppose I don't have... I never had anyone in my life in particular that ever watched a soap opera, so I have, like, no idea. It barely exists to me.
General Hospital is still number one. General motherfucking hospital.
Kids Hospital? Or Children's?
Oh, God, that shit is so funny. I love that.
Children's Hospital is great.
It is so good. I'm not normally into that kind of like absurdist absolutely nonsense kind of comedy. But it just like
the
like
group of actors on that show is like really
everything was right about it. Yeah, exactly. It was like a constant hit from like moment to moment.
Yeah,
it had me. That was good. Oh my God! Yeah, General Hospital started in 1963. Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
How? Hard to believe TV existed back then.
Yeah.
That was only a few years before this show came out. But they're still actually
happening. Like it's the same exact show. Yeah. Like
It's not like Discovery or DS9. Yeah.
It's not like they're onto a whole different show now where they've changed the cast and changed everything about it.
Yeah. Like, obviously, the cast has turned over on all these shows. Nobody can go from 1963 to present. You've died, I guess.
Wacky.
Yeah, wacky. Yeah. All right.
Yeah, guys, thanks. I'll talk to both of you soon. I don't have a lot going on next couple of days, so I'll be around. I'm definitely going to talk to you Monday. Go home. Yo, if you want to hear more opinions from myself, Dave, and Saint, myself is Dave from David Saint about House of the Dragon and Game of Thrones, you can check out our new podcast, Maybe We'll Fire and Blood, which comes out on Sunday nights, roughly an hour or so after the episodes. So you can find that wherever you found this. And let's talk to Chris about The Squire of Gothos, and then we will talk. And then I will read the answers to the question of the week. So thank you for listening. Thank you for being here. Awesome to be here. Everything is swimming right along. It is super duper the summertime. All kinds of things are happening. Here's me and Chris. So, spoilers.
Do you remember the episode? Have you seen it before?
What, Futurama? Oh, of this?
No, this one.
I have never seen that one.
All right, well, that's good, because as a person who has never seen the episode, thoughts?
Charlie X? I can't believe that is exactly the one the Futurama episode is based on.
Yeah.
Because we've talked about that a lot. We've compared it to other episodes. There's definitely some Charlie X there and here. Mm-hmm. And Bellatro or whatever that guy's name is. Oh, did you tell me a story about Clint Howard and George Lucas, right?
Was that me? I might have looked up something and said something, but I don't have anything in my head about him.
I guess he was, I don't know if it was for Star Trek or something, but he was auditioning for something and went to meet George Lucas. And George Lucas
was like, I sent you like a meme about that. Yeah.
Hey, Baylock!
Yeah, it was a meme I'd seen, and I sent you the meme.
Wow, well, it was definitely a fun episode. I was thinking a lot about how it is in a little bit, and maybe just because of having a really annoying character, but it definitely mirrors Charlie X and also Where No Man Has Gone Before, which is
Gary Mitchell, yeah.
Gary Mitchell, right, okay. So, I mean, yeah, we got that kind of similar, but this is the most all-out John Delancey-ass annoying character. Like,
it's so perfect. It's so good.
He does the judge shit. He shows up on the... For some reason, you know what, I'm picturing Q when he dresses up as a mariachi, but he shows up as some kind of old earth general at some point, right?
Most of the episode he's in his Napoleonic...
Right, yeah. Oh, no, Trelane is.
Yeah.
I mean John Delancey in, like, any time on the Enterprise D.
Oh, I guarantee you, yeah. I'm sure he's even done Napoleonic garb as well.
Yeah. Wow, yeah. So there's a lot of... I mean, I feel like almost those earlier episodes that this is like... This is almost like the crescendo. This is like they've pulled it together. I can't believe it is the exact Futurama ending. Like, exactly! Like, we joked about how Charlie's parents show up and take him away, and that's not exactly what happens. That's exactly what happens in this episode.
Yep.
Great! I can't... Wow, I finally saw the Star Trek episode where somebody's parents just show up and say, knock it off, asshole. Fantastic.
I'm sorry, I didn't remember that was the ending on this one. I'm gonna be straight up. Like, I knew it was one of the, like, something weird, but I couldn't remember the exact ending because it's been, again, forever since I've seen the show. But as soon as it got there, I'm like, yeah, this is perfection. Because, like, again, you said it straight up. We've joked about it. It's come up in passing a couple times. I mean, we've watched the episode with you so you could see the Futurama episode because you hadn't seen it before. But yeah, no, it's so good. It was so perfect. 10 out of 10. I'm not even waiting. It's a 10 out of 10 for me, 100%. This is definitely one of the best episodes in the entire show. I don't care.
I didn't quite catch it if he said there was a negative displacement reading and a light warp or something. But yeah, there's something about a light warp. One of those guys, DeSalle, picks something up.
There's a bunch of techno babbles.
The sensors, yeah. And everyone's sitting around. This one, everyone's relaxing. No one's, yeah, this one comes out of nowhere because the crew's sitting around drinking coffee on the bridge. They're bullshitting. Spock's making fun of them for not knowing what a desert is and liking palm trees. Spock hates palm trees. Another thing that annoys Spock.
Everything annoys Spock.
Oh, yeah. But when they notice this light warp and displacement reading and they find a little unnoted planet, completely never materializes into anything, has nothing to do with the rest of the episode, but Kirk says, notify the Discovery.
Yeah, that was such a throwaway line. I feel like that's why they've named Discovery Discovery, was because of that one throwaway line there, and being like,
that would be
someone's gonna get it.
That would be so cool. And now it's, now Discovery has all merged into just one blob in my head, but I mean, it definitely wasn't Kirk, it was Pike, but I feel like when Discovery and the Enterprise were both on the show doing stuff, they were doing, like, sneaky things, you know, out on the edges, and, you know, they would contact each other, they were more in communication with each other than, you know, Starfleet or whatever, and they were kind of, you know, both ships were out investigating whatever was going on in season two.
Yeah, I feel like, like I said, I think it's meant as a bit of an Easter egg for the fans who are, you know, maybe a little bit too much of a fan of the show in general, to be all like, yo, guys, see, we got you here. We listened, you know? And I think it's really cute. Like, I never would have put the two together myself. Like, why would I? But I like it. It's nice. It's a nice little throwaway. Made 50 years in advance.
We named the ship after this particular line because it never goes anywhere, so that means we can do anything we want with it. Let's keep our eyes open. Let's see if they mention the Discovery or ever meet the Discovery. I know there's a Defiant.
The only Defiant I know is the one from DS9.
DS9.
It's one of the 90s Treks has a Defiant.
Yeah. And I believe that the first ship to go to the Mirror Universe is the USS Defiant in this series in TOS. Okay. Yeah. Okay. But there's a couple Defiants. I think maybe, I never followed this up, but I think someone mentioned a Defiant in Star Trek Into Darkness, which kind of makes sense. There's a bunch of, part of that movie is about RoboCop commissioning a bunch of powerful new ships. So there might be a Defiant in that movie. There's a couple Defiants.
Now I want to rewatch Into Darkness.
I kind of do too, and it kind of, does it have a kind of an iffy reputation out of the three? It's the iffiest.
It's the second one, right? So that's the one with Benedict Cumberbatch. And
yes, good job.
Yes. So there's a few things in it that are problematic that when it came out, mostly I recall is people being pissy about shot-for-shot remake without it being a shot-for-shot remake. Like they were clearly doing Wrath of Khan, but they weren't doing Wrath of Khan properly, and that was a problem. And I get it. I kind of agree. The way that they handled it was poorly done. I was not super jazzed about how they tried to. They were clearly doing Wrath of Khan, but then we're clearly not. Ooh,
yeah, they tried to trick everyone. You know? Yeah,
and it was just kind of dumb, but at the same time, like, I don't know. I didn't think it was a terrible movie. If you're not someone who's looking for that out of it, it's manageable. It's not terrible. But if you're looking for that, weird fan
annoyances.
Yeah, but if you're looking for it to be properly done, it's not a proper shot for shot remake, and it is annoying that they tried to pull the wool over fans' eyes with it.
So our setup is we've found a weird displacement reading. Look, a little planet we've never seen before. Notified the Discovery. Oh, shit. Kirk and Sulu have vanished. So after the intro, we come back and Uhura receives a text message that says, greetings and felicitations. The text message is also written in like old English font. Because, we'll find out soon that Trelane is about 900 years too late about the history of the Earth. So they're texting with him. He says, hip, hip, hurrah, and tally-ho. We don't know his name is Trelane or who's sending them these text messages. But it's very silly already. And we got some guys named DeSalle and Jaeger, who end up not really having much to do with the storyline. Trelane mentions that DeSalle is French and is excited that a Frenchman is there because he likes Napoleon. But other than that, these are Not even red shirts, because they survive. They and McCoy suit up with ill-fitting face masks. Because, oh yeah, it's worth mentioning. Also, Spock hands Dr. McCoy a laser beacon. They have a whole prop for it, and that's never mentioned again. He's like, here, McCoy, if you have trouble, set off this laser beacon. Unless I missed it, we never see the laser beacon again.
No, I don't think we do.
But they also, the reason they're all suited up is because the atmosphere is very dangerous. There's radiation, there's tornadoes, they'll die very quickly if they're down there without this stuff. And I mention that because just like a lot of other science fiction things that people complain about, Prometheus and probably some other pieces of Star Trek media, they go down there and they go, oh, wait, this seems fine. Let's take our protective gear off.
The air is exactly that of our home atmosphere.
Unlike those other things that I mentioned, they don't end up getting in trouble. It actually is. We determine, and Spock notes later on, that there is an area on the planet that just seems very habitable, just like Earth. What's that doing there? That's where our guys are. When our away team finds an enormous manor house in this area that they have teleported down to. And when they go inside, Kirk and Sulu are frozen, standing there all frozen. There's a bozo playing a piano, a very whimsical fellow, General Trelane required. He eventually insists that they call him Squire, the Squire of Gothos. This is planet Gothos. And he mentions that Earth is one of his hobbies. However, he very quickly, like, snaps Kirk and Sulu back to being alive, and so everyone's hanging out. But they're 900 light years from Earth, so he's looking at Earth and seeing Earth 900 years in the past, dressing up as Napoleon and talking about wars and conquests and human... He keeps talking about... humans as predators and how predatory they are and how he's very interested in their weapons and their warfare. He's super bored. At this point in my notes, I wrote down, this guy is totally bored and he wants... My first take, obviously, we know that he just wants to fuck around with them as long as he can, but my first take is like, okay, this guy's bored and he wants to hear about human wartime stories. Forgetting Sarah Marshall? Holy shit.
Sorry, why are we talking about the Kevin Smith movie?
I meant to say Saving Private Ryan.
Okay. It is not Kevin Smith at all.
It's Jason Segel, though.
He's a writer, yeah, but I thought Kevin Smith was the director. No, it's Nicholas Stoller. I've never seen Forgetting Sarah Marshall. I'm not a big fan of Segel, so I just avoided it.
Boy, it's got one scene.
It's got Paul Rudd in it too.
It's got one scene that's just... I'm just gonna fucking show it to you right now.
Did you know that when filming How I Met Your Mother, what's her name? Allison Hannigan was like straight up just like she refused to kiss Segel because he's such a heavy smoker.
Ew. I gotta make you look at this because I love this scene to death.
I'm just waiting for it to go live so I can.
Here it is. I love this scene to death. Okay, ready?
Hold on. Oh. Go ahead.
Okay.
Everybody hates you. Everybody wishes that you were dead. Cause Peter, you suck. Peter, you suck. Peter, your music is fucking terrible. Peter, you suck. Peter, you suck. Peter, you don't do anything of value. Peter, you suck. Write some music, but instead you sit and write these bullshit songs. It's so self-loathing. Go see a psychiatrist. I hate the psychiatrist. Well, go see one anyway. I don't like the psychiatrist. You need to go see one. See a psychiatrist. I'm not going.
So fucking stupid.
I love that shit.
Oh my god. But yeah, no, I've never watched it. I just, again, I'm not a fan of his, so I kind of just avoided it. And again, it's got Paul Rudd in it, who also I can't stand, so. Hence why his being the red shirt and fucking Only Murders was perfect.
It's not a great movie, but that...
It's gotten a lot of praise. Like, I've had it... As soon as people hear I like romantic comedies, they're almost always like, oh, you should watch this. And I'm like, I don't...
Yeah, I don't know. No one's ever said that to me, but I don't talk about romantic comedies, I guess, but...
Yeah.
I don't feel like... I don't know. I don't feel like... I mean, I guess it's like... I guess it's kind of beloved. I guess people still talk about it.
I don't hear about it as much now as I did, say, even 10 years ago. But it's I think it's gotten old enough now, people have finally started... Like, it's a 16-year-old movie, right? Like, I think people are finally leaving it in the dust.
Yeah, and it, you know, that whole era was bad.
Yeah.
2008, like...
Yeah.
I thought the year 2000 was bad for culture. I thought some real shit came out within 2 or 3 years around that time. But, like, I think 2008 is the actual direct center of, like, bad media and bad art and garbage movies and TV. I think
I feel
it irradiates from that point.
Yeah, I feel like this one, like, when reality TV really kicked off way more than it should.
Yeah, a lot of Jersey Shore shit was going on and... The Kardashians, really coming up around 2008.
Yeah, and like I'm sorry, I get why, you know, you guys took off of this shit because like it got a lot of sales back then, and people can't look away. But like it just, as soon as Hollywood as a whole learned that they could just phone it in heavier than they already thought they could, Ugh. I don't like the state of modern television overall. I think we're starting to come out of it some,
yeah.
But I think as well, part of what we're running into now with television and movies in general is an oversaturation. They're making so many of them to try and hit those
well, yeah,
targets again, and it's that's affecting it.
It's quantity over quality, because if you make 100 things and one of them hits, that's all you need. And sometimes people will like absolute garbage, no matter anyway.
Yeah.
And you're just hoping someone eats your garbage. DeSalle does something funny. He tries to sneak up on Trelane to stun him with a phaser pistol, but he does it right in front of Trelane's giant-ass mirror. And Trelane just looks up and sees him creeping up in the mirror. DeSalle must have been able to see himself creeping up in the mirror, so I think it's just to get our attention to the fact that he's got a giant mirror in the room.
That's what it felt like. That was the point, yeah.
The mirror is important.
Because then they also call it out shortly thereafter about that's probably where the... I think I'm making a big jump, actually, in when things happen. But like that's, they ended up calling it out later on about the tech... the computer that's making shit happen is behind that.
Yeah, that's, I think, yeah, him and Spock have a conversation and figure that out the second time they're down on the planet.
Yeah.
Which is suit. While they're here, because now Spock is up on the ship and he's going, what's that area where there's life? Oh, look, there's six. I've lost count. Three, five. There's five guys down there. And so Spock, you know, it's not a big leap for him to figure out what's going on at this point. But before he teleports them up, McCoy scans him with the tricorder and says that he doesn't exist at all. It's not even like he's dead. He's just not being picked up at all. The fire in the fireplace has no heat. There's various other cues. Ha 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 ha. Various other cues that indicate that you know, this is artificially fabricated, whatever. You know, as always, there's some, you know, there's something going on with some illusion that they're all being shown. But, yeah, and Trelane, Kirk is like, you know, Trelane is starting to be like, I'm not going to let you go. I'm a fucking spoiled brat, which you'll find out at the end of the episode. But Kirk is, you know, starting to argue with him, and he says, there are 400 men and women on my ship. And Trelane, boy. Like, women? Let's get them down here right now. Which is about when Spock figures it out and teleports them all back up to the ship. Everything's fine. And that's the end. But when they start to leave, this is some Delancey shit. Like, when he shows up on the bridge wearing like a Napoleonic is
Napoleonic
fucking uniform, like 900 years in the past. You know, he does a lot of Delancey stuff.
He really does the
uniforms, the past. We're gonna get to the point where he puts Kirk on trial. That's so fucking Delancey.
No, I need you just like the way if you listen to Delancey, Hugh Delancey specifically, versus this not quite a Q, you'll actually hear speech pattern similarities as well.
No, really.
Like just how they speak, not necessarily word choices, but intonation, accent. Delancey doesn't have the mid-Atlantic or British accent, but this guy you can hear he's putting on a bit of an accent in that sphere, like a light one.
Yeah.
And you can hear with Delancey when he starts his cue, he kind of
leans into it a little bit. Yeah, when he gets dramatic, he leans into a little bit of a formal almost mid. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's not constant with Delancey, but it's there. And I don't know if it's a conscious, like, I'd love to be able to sit down with the man and have a conversation around his choice on how he decided to make Q. Because, like, did he watch this and base Q off of our good friend from the Squire, the Squire? Or did he just make it up on his own and it happened to be similar to this thing? Like, you know, I really would love to actually be able to sit down and pick apart the voice and how he got to the voice and the way he, like, the mannerisms. Because it is also, if you look at the two of them side by side, like, how they move, there's similarities in that. Like, it feels so heavily influenced when you look at Q versus Trelane.
It would be really interesting to me if they had Delancey specifically look at this episode. It's not this may have been, you know, the plan all along. I mean, not like they were planning on having a guy called Q, but, you know, when they were making TNG, they wanted to look back at TOS and use as much of the meat as they could. Or, you know, they used a lot of the meat. And I can totally picture someone being like, yeah, Delancey, take a look at this episode. You're going to be playing a character similar to this bozo. And he did.
And I think if he did do that, like, I do like that they've chosen to do that, like, that they're leaning so heavily into, because you're going to have fans who are watching, who've watched both, who are going to pick up on it, you know what I mean? And it's those subtle callbacks to the original series that throughout TNG that really helped cement it as a show that could continue, like, because it pulled the fan base from the 60s forward to the late 80s, without it being as heavy-handed as it could have been, they're able to make it accessible to a newer audience, right? Like, I mean, TNG came out around when I was born, and I grew up watching it. I was probably too young to watch it, but I grew up watching it because it was made so accessible to kids, right?
Yeah.
Like, the phasers are a great way, because no one dies. Oh, no, he's not dead. He's been stunned. Oh, no, there's no blood. It's not a bullet. Like, they made it like a live-action G.I. Joe.
Kind of.
But better, because it wasn't, you know,
they blow. Some guy gets his face blown right off in the first season, and then his head also. But his face first.
Yeah. I'm talking as a general thing, though.
I know. We were in the last episode.
I'm not pretending there wasn't.
We were talking about the guy whose face gets blown off, yeah.
No, I'm not saying, like, it's always perfect, but generally speaking, they did a pretty good job, you know?
So he doesn't even really waste a lot of time capering around the bridge, which is like Delancey Q's favorite thing to do.
Yes.
But he says almost immediately, he's like, you know, my drawing room would be a much more appropriate place to continue this conversation. So he gets back the five guys he had. He also takes Spock and Uhura and Yeoman Ross. And, he says a bunch of gross things about Uhura and Yeoman Ross and how impressed he is with their appearance. I guess that's what I'll say about that scene. It's gross. It's, you know.
Yeah, no, the whole, I said it while we were watching it, like, racism. It's just racism. It's just, and I mean, I'm gonna give them the benefit of the doubt that they didn't realize, because, like, those phrasings, I still see them come up fairly frequently now, but it's just racism.
He's also, you know, he's
playing a character from, you know, 900 years ago who doesn't know any better.
From before the 60s, yeah.
who's not supposed to know any better. And that's what I'm saying, like,
it's hard to tell, basically, because how intentional was it, and how just gross is it? Yeah,
well, to a degree, it feels like they wanted to create the character to be as realistic as they would be. So somebody who's actually only got those, you know, documents from quote unquote 900 years before. So again, the 1600s, 1700s, maybe even 1800s, but like writing would talk about like Black women and African-American women with those phrasings back then. So that would have been an appropriate way for a character who hasn't seen anything past, say, 1850 to speak.
Yeah.
But also, don't.
Yeah, also maybe don't do it exactly like this, but yeah.
Yeah, so it's a hard line to draw, like the walk of, like, how historically accurate do you want the character to be whilst also respecting modern sensibilities? And I think to a degree, there was a lack of respect to modern sensibilities, not because they were trying to be racist actively, but because I think in the 60s, it wasn't really seen just how bad that was. Like, we're talking when they're still doing yellowface and like stuff like that in movies, right? Like, it's the era. It's not a forgiving of it. It's I can see why they went the way they did, but if it was being done nowadays, they would not go that way for a good reason, I would hope.
Yeah, you're always speaking to your audience to some extent, and your audience's sensibilities may end up, you know, coloring your work, and that, you know.
Yeah. And I think that's one thing that you and I have touched on a few times so far, of like, this was woke and very forward for the era. It's still backwards now.
Yeah,
but weird. For the 60s, this was really a forward-thinking show. You know, they were doing a lot to be woke.
Yeah, but in the way, you know, you can... and there is definitely... I may have said exactly this already, but, you know, there is a way in... By showing a character from the past and showing how weird their ideas may be, that's always been a way to make yourself look progressive.
Yes. Yes.
So there may be a little of that.
You do that occasionally throughout the whole show, too, yeah.
It's the intention that,
yeah.
That matters. But no,
at its core, I don't think there's an intent to harm. And so I personally am not taking offense to it. It's very clearly a problematic bit that doesn't age well, but...
Yeah, that's.
I don't see harm intended there.
The worst part is that it doesn't age well. Just kidding.
Yeah, that's I think the only part of the whole episode that really didn't age well. Overall, honestly, everything else I think aged just fine. It's so, just that, like, 30 seconds of like, no, this is just uncomfortable.
Yeah. So this is when Spock and Kirk get a little moment. Yeah, Trelane's dancing. He magics. Yeoman Ross to have a princess dress. Another princess dress.
That's because they were easy to come
across. Was it the same princess dress from the last episode?
So no, I don't think it was.
So they're dancing around, and that's when Kirk and Spock have a little conversation, and they're like, you know, what could be the device he's using to do all these things? And they figure out that it's a mirror by some, you know, by some plot line process of elimination. And Kirk gets into, he insults Trelane to make him, because I guess he's, I don't know if, first of all, I don't know what a phaser would do to a mirror, and I don't know if their phasers work right now, but he tricks Trelane into giving him a pistol because they're going to duel, like Aaron Burr and that guy they wrote the play about. And Kirk shoots the mirror, and they again escape and teleport back to the ship and fly away, and that's the end. Oh, except after a little bit of flying away, the planet Gothos is right in front of them again, and then they have a big chase scene where they're trying to outrun the planet, but it's always in front of them wherever they turn, and that's kind of silly.
Yeah.
This is still... They keep... This there's a lot of back and forth. They keep escaping. And then realizing that they cannot escape.
Well, until the parents show up.
Right. So one final time, Kirk is like, all right, this is enough. I'm going to beam down and I'm going to insult that motherfucker until he lets us go. He beams down and he beams directly into the courtroom scene, which is very Delancey Q. Trelane has got a big judge wig on and a gavel, and he's judging Kirk for being a dick and not wanting to play with him. He's more fun than Charlie or Gary Mitchell.
Yes.
He's fun in the way that, yeah, it's like they finally got together the story they wanted to do with like someone like this, because he really is just behaving like a child. And
you don't notice it. Like he comes off Q comes off the same way the entire time Q's around, right? Where it's a near infinite power being doing just whatever the hell it wants. Cause if it's got infinite power, why wouldn't it?
Right.
And so it doesn't necessarily come off like it's being childish the entire episode until, oh, those are your parents, you're just a kid, and that reframes everything up to now.
Yeah, looking back at it, you can really tell that he's just... Because it's not... His motives are never clear. He's just being an asshole. He's just like, you guys can't leave. I'm not going to let you. And it really is exactly the way that, like, a shitty kid behaves. And yeah, spoilers, the end of it is the end of the Futurama episode. His parents come and scold him.
Yeah. A lot, too. No, you can't keep playing with your toys. Put them away. But Mom, I'm not done yet.
Yeah, the final note I wrote down is, so this is the Futurama one. And it's also Charlie X. I mean, it's, yeah.
Charlie X. In some ways, it is.
Charlie X has a very similar, like I probably said this also, but... You know, the people that come and pick up Charlie aren't necessarily his parents, and he's not necessarily a misbehaving child. But Charlie X is very close to the Futurama episode as well. This is a better version of Charlie X. Yeah, 10 out of 10.
It is, yeah.
That's The Squire of Gothos, the first episode.
It's so much fun. I'm so glad we got to this one and you were able to see it. I love this episode. It's just, I don't know if it's my favorite one. I don't think it's my favorite episode, but it's definitely one of the ones that, like, is very memorable to me, you know?
Cool. Yeah, I really don't feel like I've seen it, yeah. I was honestly surprised at the twist. I really didn't think that was what it was going to be.
No, as soon as I saw the guy's photo, I'm like, oh yeah, that guy. Yeah, now I know this one. We're good. This is going to be great. Like, the second, so...
It almost reminds me, and I wonder if there's any inspiration just by the structure of the plot. Do you recall an episode of TNG where it's like they find a planet that's been destroyed, but there's one zone that's habitable, and there's an elderly man and woman living there, and like... I don't remember. I think, yeah, like Kirk, or not Kirk, Picard really wants to take them and like bring them...
This is an episode of the show?
TNG.
Just on a planet, there's like a family living in a
man and a woman, and like they're in danger because like the radiation is going to close in or whatever. And so most of the episode is Picard trying to convince them to leave with him on the Enterprise. But like
the closest I've got that comes to mind is there's a Lower Decks episode where there's a meteor.
Oh yeah. There are two people. Yeah, I wonder if that's a reference to this too.
It might be. That's a little stuff that's coming to mind.
Yeah, but like
the Lower Decks episode.
A bunch of weird stuff happens, and like I think he might fake both of their deaths or something to try to get the Enterprise to leave, but like Picard's being nosy, and like it becomes obvious that he's doing weird things with some kind of power set to try to get the Enterprise to go away. And
yeah, I can't place that one.
It's similar structurally. Yeah, well, we'll get there. We'll figure out what it is.
One of these days, yep. One of these years.
Yeah, thank you, Chris, for participating in this.
Okay, pause for the recording to have a gap in it. Potential question for this episode, what's your favorite cue trickery?
Oh, cool. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
I don't know. But I think, actually, to be frank, I'm going to be honest, I think my favorite cue trickery, or cue appearance, I don't know which one you'd rather go with, is when he brings his kid to Janeway and makes her like, is like, you get to raise my son.
That's a very Charlie episode.
It is a very
but I'm not saying toothless in any kind of negative manner. It's much more fun because it's toothless.
Yeah, no, 100%. I love that episode. It's a ton of fun. I like the queue in general, though. I know for some people they might be a little bit disruptive, but if the queue show up in an episode, I'm usually pretty confident it's going to be a good episode, you know?
You know when Harry and Paris go to their little Irish town and Harry is hitting on a girl, he's going to, like, take her out on a date or something. I think he goes to kiss her, and right as he kisses her, Paris turns her into a cow.
I think this, yeah, they're in the holodeck. It's New Haven.
What if we're all holograms and Q is the guy playing in the holodeck?
No.
No? Because that's Q shit. What my favorite Q scene, I was like, who does something that really, what's a really funny moment where some kind of Q magic happens? And I thought about Harry's girlfriend turning into a cow. It wasn't a Q, it was Tom Paris.
Tom Paris is a bit of a dick, and I love him for it. That's why I do wish that Locarno could have actually been Paris instead of them making a new character.
It would have been a whole different, I don't know if it would have been different or not, but I mean, it would have been interesting. It would have changed how Lower Decks plays out, but...
Well, I mean, I don't think they would have done the episode the way they did for Lower Decks, right?
Right, yeah, exactly. But yeah, if they didn't... I mean, that's almost addressing the fact that Paris was not Locarno. Wow, what's happening to my voice?
Probably keep talking. You're probably going to need to take a break soon.
Yeah, I got to make a lunch. So the question of the week is a simple one. What is your favorite silly thing that Q does? And I added, any fictional godlike bozo will do. Saint says, mariachi band? He says, maybe not his favorite, but the silliest. Pete K says, this one god figure created the earth, and then 6 billion years later, I have to pay tax. Fucking dick. Weebs says, in Picard, when Q hacks Soong's lab and produces a copy of his business card on the 3D printer, which is weird because why would he ever have to do that, except for the fact that when they show the card on screen, there is a telephone number on it, and if called, gets you Q's voicemail inbox where you could be verbally slighted by him IRL. That's funny. Pete agrees with that one. And then Locke has submitted an episode from the famous TNG edits, I believe. I don't think I've ever seen this one, so I'm going to watch it right now. We're starting with Q naked on the floor, which has already been discussed. And he's just licking his lips and looking at everyone on the bridge. He's still doing it. Everyone's trying not to look at him. Everyone's trying. And the credits are rolling. Yeah, good. That was a good answer, Locke. Yeah, look forward to talking to all y'all really soon. The question of this week. Next week, we're going to be looking at Arena, where Kirk fights a guy in a lizard suit. The question is going to be, which TOS character would you least like to fight? Which TOS character or creature would you least like to have to fight in an arena? And if you want, you can tell me who you would most like to fight. And y'all probably say that it doesn't have to be TOS if you really have a better answer. I like to give everyone as much wiggle room as they want. You can answer this question on my Discord, which you can find if you go to koyadk.tv. All my links to all my socials and bullshit are there, along with a link to my Discord, so you can talk to us about all this stuff. Like I said, we'll be talking about House of the Dragon on Maybe We'll Fire and Blood. I do another podcast called Maybe We'll Talk. I don't need to tell everyone all these things every episode, so see you next week, and we'll talk about Arena. Peace!